You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
You're listening to episode number 15 of Star Wars Beyond the Films on StarWarsReport.com and on Middle Earth Network Radio. This is your Star Wars discussion podcast. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we try to ask the tough questions, questions that have bothered you for a very long time, or just simple ones that have perplexed you off and on, because it certainly perplexes us from time to time. You ponder about Star Wars, so do we. Now, I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler, and with me, as always, the defender of the expanded universe, defender of the EU, Mr. Mark Herleman.
Hey! He did not say Whistler. You gotta learn your spot. Oh, I'm just gonna put a restraining bolt on you. Hey, everybody, how is it going? Are you ready? I'm ready. Whistler's ready. Nathan's ready. Let's do this.
At some point, Whistler's just gonna get out of line, and little baby Jaina is gonna jump on him and be like, "Ride, ride, give me ride," and be zipping around on him like he's like a little trike. There you go. You don't have to worry about the piggyback rides because Whistler can handle all of it. That's what he's made for.
I can always build him a special baby carriage attachment on the top. Here, go take her for a walk. She needs some sunshine.
Like, instead of the top opening up and firing out a lightsaber, it like sticks out a bottle or a rattle. You know, I like that. I mean, you got all those different appendages anyway.
Instead of the electricity that he does when he's trying to throw everybody off, it's like streamers and baby ribbons. It's a girl!
Exactly. And if he's got a long range, he's got that little long range communication antenna, that's your baby monitor right there. I'm telling you. All right, well, folks, we are going to be taking a look at a topic here that was mentioned briefly in our previous episode. We were taking a look back at the idea of, are we done cramming yet? You know, all the different stories in similar eras with similar characters. And one of the things that came up there was this issue of how sometimes Star Wars, it doesn't really reboot, but Star Wars goes through and enters a brand new era of storytelling, whether we're talking about Tales of the Jedi, Knights of the Old Republic, Dawn of the Jedi, Legacy, and so forth. And it sort of repeats similar patterns over and over again. You know, it's the lather, rinse, repeat kind of thing, which is the way I always describe the beginning of Fate of the Jedi, though, as you'll hear in our wrap-up of Fate of the Jedi eventually, I think I sort of understand where that's coming from for that now. But lather, rinse, repeat. Star Wars, in a sense, follows similar patterns, whether we're talking about the rise of the new Sith, or the original Sith, or the Sith Empire, or the return of the Sith Empire, or Jason becoming Sith. A Sith, or the one Sith, all these different
Lost
Sith groups.
Tribe of the Sith. We've got those ugly, smelly Sith.
Lots and lots of Sith versus Jedi conflicts. Of course, that is a core of Star Wars, however. The question we want to ask here is, does the expanded universe and this whole cyclical nature of Jedi versus Sith, or light side versus dark side, in any way undermine the overall Star Wars saga, at least the film saga, by making the end of Return of the Jedi sort of a beginning of sorts for a different era instead of an ending, and in a sense not really ending, providing finality to it, as opposed to just being yet another time that the Sith were brought down, only to rise again later? And this is a topic that, Mark, I believe you were the one who originally proposed this one, so why don't you start us off? I mean, this is a big, big topic.
It is. You know, the one that always gets me is, with this topic, it was always a ponder of mine because it was something that I don't actually ascribe to. I love everything post-Return of the Jedi, but there are a contingent of fans out there that only like up to the end of Return of the Jedi because George Lucas himself said he had nothing else planned, therefore nothing else existed. And the mere existence of all this, of Boba Fett living, of these Jedi, of these Sith that come back, is kind of going in the face of the ending of what was a beautiful ending to their saga. And I have to look at that, and I have to say that there is some merit to their complaint.
Now, Mark, is it still a beautiful ending with the no in Jedi?
No, it's probably not as good as it could have been, okay. But I still, like I said, I have a hard time putting myself in their shoes 100% because I really enjoy a lot of the stories that come after that. That is my favorite era. But I do understand where they're talking about in the terms of Anakin Skywalker's sacrifice. Yeah, it does take away from Anakin Skywalker's sacrifice where he destroys the Sith as per the prophecy just to have the Sith show up a few decades later. I could see why that is very frustrating to certain fans. And even myself, when I'm reading Apocalypse, you know, there is a line about the Chief of State, and I'm just thinking to myself, good golly, how many Chief of States are we going to have that follow this certain religion? And, you know, even myself, I'm starting to scratch my mind going, okay, are we getting to a point where we are repeating too many times? And is this kind of destroying it? But I don't know if I can officially put myself in that other set of shoes to say yes. I still think that there is merit to what they're doing. I think that they're skirting the issue enough, and they've done it in a way that we can still say Anakin died, wiping out the rule of two. You know, granted, some might say, well, Lamia, she kind of kept it going in a sense. And yeah, you can say that. And almost Jason could have been the last of the line of two. Maybe. I don't know. It's tough to say with that. But there's definitely a interesting aspect of the Sith. You know, like you mentioned, Nathan, the new Sith, the old Sith, the lost tribe, the one Sith. Now we've got the Sith who were Jedi. And, you know, that's a Dawn of the Jedi reference for those of you who do not know. You know, there have been an evolution of Sith going down. And I think that that evolution of the Sith is what makes it okay for them to keep coming up. Books, and this time I'm actually going to reference, I want to say it is Jedi Apprentice. In the Jedi Apprentice series, we have witnessed how the teachings of the Sith and the old historical landmarks themselves can be a doorway for regular people who happen to have Force sensitivity to bring the Sith up. Again, another reference here would be, I believe, Tales of the Jedi, where we see in... I want to say in the Onderon system, where we see a cult rise up in the same similar fashion based off of some old teachings left behind. And I think that that is what gives us, and by us, I say the ones that try to make everything work and find retcons, it gives us our out. We're able to say, well, yeah, but there's a reason for it. And I think that that makes me sleep better at night. I don't know about you, Nathan.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the way that it's handled is done fairly well. I think that those who... I mean, there is a valid argument out there to say that if Star Wars is Anakin Skywalker's saga, or the saga of the Skywalker family, then yeah, Return of the Jedi should have been a major ending point. Of course, if that's the case, you can't have any stories set prior to Anakin Skywalker being born. Or maybe just the machinations up to having him created. So maybe the Darth Plagueis novel can fit, but pretty much everything else, no. Just Anakin, sorry... That's where everything has to start. And at the same time, it then has to end with that Skywalker line, whether we're talking about the death of Anakin as Vader in Return of the Jedi. Spoiler! Spoiler! He doesn't survive, and he shows up as a ghost with long hippie hair. At the same time, though, you could say, well, maybe the post-Return of the Jedi stuff at least is still somewhat valid, because the Skywalker line does continue through Ben Skywalker, and apparently through some other Skywalker offspring, until we finally get to Cole and Cade going into the Legacy era. Granted, you still have the Dark Empire stuff with the return of the Emperor Reborn. You still have Lumaya. You still have Jason as Darth Kytus. You still have, you know, the Lost Tribe of the Sith coming back, though coming back from where if the earlier stuff didn't exist? You know, and you got the stuff in Legacy. You still have a lot of different returns of the Sith and that sort of thing going on if you're looking at that post-Return of the Jedi, focusing on Anakin and then forward in the Skywalker line. But... you know, there is a level at which you could say it somewhat undermines it, you know? But that goes back to that whole thing. And we dealt with this when we were talking about saga versus setting and all this kind of stuff, which is, you know, there's Lucas's saga, and then there's what he refers to as the alternate universe, or another part of this trinity. They refer to it as the expanded universe, the official continuity, whatever. You got Lucas's saga, and then there's the stuff that's being done by all these licensed works. And in Lucas's saga, yeah, it's all pretty much condensed down to 6 films, the Clone Wars cartoon series, and maybe the Genndy Tartakovsky series, depending on how that is or isn't dealt with as we move along in the Clone Wars. But at the same time, you have this broader continuity out there, and I think that in the standpoint of having a broader expanding universe, it wouldn't make sense, really, to not have the Sith returning at times, or at least new dark side cults arising at times. I'm a history teacher. I teach regular world history and AP, the College Board's AP Advanced Placement World History class now. And if there's anything that tends to stand up within history that helps make it interesting, is that people are people. You know, it doesn't matter what time period you put us in. We seem to make the same mistakes, follow the same instincts, and sort of get caught up in the same type of things over and over again. Like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know, are we talking about the Hindus and Muslims working together against Britain in India before the British are gone and then they start going at each other again with India and Pakistan? Are we talking about the Soviet Union working with the other Western allies during World War II and then going at it in the Cold War, us helping out Saddam Hussein against Iran, then the Gulf War, us training Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen against the Soviets, and then 9/11. You know, there's patterns like that. And within Star Wars, you see patterns too. You know, that's the way history plays out. And you look at something like The Essential Atlas or The Essential Guide to Warfare that's coming soon, which is awesome, by the way, by Jason Fry, and you get a sense that this is being written as a history. You mentioned the idea of, you know, how many different chancellors can you have with the same religion? There's Constispex, I think is how you say it. This like religious era, this Pius Dia era, where you've got these chancellors that are religious fanatics. And there's all kinds of great twists and turns the saga can take. But if you think of it as a history, wouldn't the only way to not have the Sith or another Sith order or some kind of offshoot of the teachings like the Krath cult during Tales of the Jedi, wouldn't the only way to not have that repeat be to either strip away the Force completely so there can't be light side or dark side, or essentially genocide, where anyone who would fit under any of those Sith titles gets wiped out, and then all of their cultural background, all their history, all their writings, everything has to be gone, all memory of them erased from existence, because otherwise, you know, that's what human beings do. That's what sentients do. We build on the past, and if an idea was intriguing enough, like rebelling against the Jedi view of the universe, or the light side view of the universe, whether we're talking the Force Wars, the First Great Schism, the Second Great Schism, aka 100-Year Darkness, any of that. If it's a good idea at one point to stand up against that authority and delve into these more forbidden ways and that lure, that seduction, isn't that something human beings or sentients will run into again and again? That's who and what we are. So I don't think it's possible necessarily to tell – it wouldn't be realistic to tell the overall broader Star Wars expanded universe and not have this kind of pattern coming back, at least not to me, not as a historian.
You know, and I look at it, we've got three big power players that keep repeating. We've got the Jedi, we've got the Sith, and we've got those unsung heroes in armor, the Mandalorians. Now, the Mandalorians are doing the same thing that the Sith have done, and when certain authors were writing The Mandalorians, it became prevalent that a lot of people didn't care for the Mandalorians coming back. Boba Fett was the only Mandalorian. Jango Fett was, you know. But even with them, it's the same thing. I mean, we see in the Legacy series, I believe it was issue 41, the Mandalorian story, theirs is the only story that did not wrap up when Legacy ended. So, I mean, even they had that kind of coming back, you know, it was always coming back. But I want to stop for a moment and talk about Dark Empire. A lot of people were really irked about the fact that Palpatine came back. And there can be an argument out there, did he really? I mean, it was a clone. Do we really know it was actually Palpatine? I believe in the RPGs, we find out that his spirit captures one of his hands. I believe it was Azrael or something like that. And he ends up going across the galaxy back to Biss where the rest of the clones were. And that's how his spirit got from when, you know, Luke and Vader did the no down the well to that point. Now, I will quickly point out, though, that they wanted to do, I believe it was a dark clone of Obi-Wan, and Lucas said, no, make it a clone of Palpatine. And that's one of the things that to me, it's like, when George says something, we kind of have to do it. But then when George makes a decision like this, he's not really invested in the EU as he is his own vision. So it's easy for him to throw an idea out there. But yet, the powers behind the EU side of things, they go with whatever George says. And so it's almost like, you know, there's a confliction there where it's like, well, is this really going to cause a problem? So I always keep that in my mind, you know, that some of the issues going on here is the two worlds trying to work together and find a happy medium. Dark Empire happened, and we've got Palpatine as the clone, all due to George. So I've got to accept that. You know, we see it in the books where there's references to Luke falling in this comic, but we only see it in that comic. You know, and it's one of those things where I always wonder, will they ever give us a story there? It'd be an interesting – I've got so much interest wrapped around that story in a book form. The cloning aspect, the Jedi aspect, the Sith aspect, what Luke learns. There's a lot of stuff there that I would like to know. And I think that's the heart of where I'm coming from with the Return of the Sith. I want to know. You know, with the Lost Tribe, there was a lot of details there. I wanted to know what was going down. When I found out there was a second schism, I wanted to know. Now we've got these new Jedi versions of Sith, and I want to know. It's like, whoa, what's going on? There, you know, like you said, there's the historical side of this. It appeals to me. I do look at it like it's a historical reference. And at times, I will look at it like, hey, maybe even the maker himself got it wrong. You know, granted, that doesn't play into the canon levels. That's just how I look at it from the historical standpoint. You know, so, you know, yeah, we're supposed to look at George as the end-all, be-all authority, but I don't look at just George's saga. I look at everything else, so I have to step out of that sometimes and try to find ways to make it fit. And I find that with the addition of Dark Empire, the Sith coming back over and over again does make sense because we have a lot of information. Like you said, the genocide thing, it didn't happen. It didn't even happen when the Jedi got wiped out. Luke was able to prove that, all the different things that Luke found. And that was when the Sith were trying to get rid of everything of the Jedi. The Jedi were just kind of rounding it up and kind of, you know, they were disposing of things that could be disposed of and then hoarding the other stuff and keeping it out of harm's way, if you will. But that's not going to get rid of it. That still leaves it there for like, oh, I believe, what was it, Secret of the Jedi, where Count Dooku ends up finding the Sith holocron and learning some things he shouldn't have learned. I mean, and that potential will always be around because there have been so many stories that have set that precedence that, well, take the Lost Tribe. There's a whole planet full of Sith that have been just sitting there for millennia. If that can happen, it could happen again and again. We're talking about a vast galaxy. So I think the potential for the Sith to reemerge, just like the Mandalorians, is ever present.
That's right. And I think that the issue you mentioned there with Dark Empire, part of what made that so controversial at the time, and remember, this was a project that was in the works before Dark Horse actually got the license. Cam Kennedy and Tom Veitch were approached on this back when Marvel still had the license. But then the license disappeared, and you know, a lot of that early work kind of went by the wayside for a while until they said, well, why don't you do this for Dark Horse? And they had to tweak the time frame of it and a lot of things because they also had the novels coming with Heir to the Empire being the first, of course. But I think that with Dark Empire, what made it so controversial, and you could say the same thing about Heir to the Empire, Jedi Academy trilogy, Tales of the Jedi, the first time that somebody is willing to step up and do something new, of course there's going to be a level of controversy to it, you know? Sure. I mean, the first time that we see the idea that the Sith can rise again, this especially with a cloned version of the Emperor, that is a big controversial deal. Later on, the only thing really controversial about Dark Empire was that, unfortunately, it didn't end after the first six-issue miniseries. although the audio dramas of that whole thing are amazing. If you ever get a chance to hear those audio dramas, check them out. They're on... There's a CD version that I wound up getting, a collector set that has them, and it's got also an audio drama of Empire's End, which you couldn't originally get separately. And, I mean, the scenes like, you know, yes, my father's destiny is my own, still blow my mind audio-wise. It's amazing work. But that kind of thing, you know, it's controversial, bringing back the Emperor at all. Oh, is that what that swoosh of energy is whenever he winds up falling into the pit, or the reactor shaft, you know, at the end of Return of the Jedi? That sort of changed my view of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, same thing. The idea of bringing Luke together with other Force users to make a Jedi Academy. That was kind of an, oh, really? That seems a natural outgrowth, but wow, they're actually going to do it. Or, okay,
well,
we're going
really
to...
Really quick, you could probably answer this. In Dark Empire, there is like a whole part that happens with Cam Solsar that is never mentioned in the comic. Is there... Did that ever happen anywhere, like in an audiobook or something? Because I don't know, and yet it's referenced a lot. It's like, when did this happen?
Yes and no. There was originally going to be a story called Lightsider. I think it was for a graphic novella, but it was a story called Lightsider, and it never got produced. It was supposed to be produced to bridge Dark Empire 1 and 2 and set up Cam Salyasar. Instead, we get the introduction of him in Dark Empire 2, and they sort of played into it a little bit in the audio drama version of Dark Empire 2, but not a lot. I'd have to go back and actually listen to it again. I remember them developing that scene a little, kind of like the way that they did with some of the deleted scenes from the films when they did the radio dramas with Brian Daly and NPR and such.
Yeah.
But I think you're hitting it right on the head. You know, there's a level of, you know, who gets to make this kind of decision? You know, are there stories that are untold? I mean, one of the big untold stories was the whole issue of where does this idea of Sith come from? You know, who is this order, this line of teaching that the characters are following? And, of course, we eventually start to get an answer to that with Tales of the Jedi. And then, well, what happens after that? And now we have questions like, what happens before that to lead into it? And it's like every time that a new era is developed, there's another era either earlier or later that wind up being created as a spinoff of it one way or the other, you know?
Yeah.
Though I guess that brings the question, I guess, that we should address somewhat is, if the big issue is the return of Jedi and Sith over and over again, maybe we should hit some of the big ones and whether or not they were actually effectively done. You know, you bring up Dark Empire as an example. I'd say going forward, you've got Lumaya, Dark Lady of the Sith. Lumaya showing up in the Marvel comics, that was, you know, decently done. Duel with the Dark Lady is still one of my favorite Star Wars comics ever. A single issue from the Marvel series where it's basically Lumaya versus Luke, and he's got his Shoto, the little shorter saber, the way that Ahsoka does.
Good episode.
Where they're kicking each other's butts and such. But just heading out of that, you got that before we get around to Dark Empire from the Marvel series. Were you very familiar with the early Lumaya stuff?
I caught some of it. I've got the one that came with the figure.
that's probably the one. That's probably Duel with the Dark Lady. It's got them dueling on the front of it. Yeah.
And she's got her little lightning whip out. It's a nice one. You know, but you mentioned Tales of the Jedi, and it's funny because, you know, we're EU fans, so we're privy to these comics and stuff. But let's go to the Clone Wars and Darth Maul coming back. And how many fans were just completely floored and blown away that Darth Maul could live through being cut in half? And I will point out, there was a Darth, and I can't remember his name right now, in Tales of the Jedi, that was just a floating head. An ancient, old, floating head. And it's like, okay, the Sith have been doing this kind of stuff for a long time in the EU. George went there. And I like it because it adds credence to this floating head. It's like, okay, well, obviously, then there is something that the Sith know that no one else knows. But, you know, it's one of those things, it definitely makes me stop and think. But yeah, Lumaya is a character. I really like the way they played with her. I was bummed more so that when with Legacy of the Force, when that series ended, they didn't give us more explanation to her. I mean, we just kind of had to take everything she said at face value. And that to me was kind of bothersome because I don't trust Sith. And so I kind of need to see something from a Jedi's point of view or a historian's point of view or some more authoritative figure in the story telling me what was going on. So when it came to Legacy, while it was good, I felt like they could have done a little more with it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, they definitely left a lot of Lumaya's background sort of vague for Legacy of the Force, which is kind of weird given the fact that she was such a prominent character. I mean, we know that she's encountered Luke before and that sort of thing, but we don't get a whole lot of the background on how, you know, she was an Imperial spy who was pretending to be a rebel pilot and Luke was framed for supposedly killing her and shooting her down. But instead, what winds up happening is that she winds up being turned into that cybernetic, more machine now than woman Lumaya character and all that kind of stuff. It's played up a lot in the Marvel stories and makes for a fun tale, but it really didn't get played up that much within the pages of Legacy of the Force. I think with Tales of the Jedi, as you mentioned, that was a great chance to get some background. I mean, that was a totally open canvas. We knew nothing at the time about what are the Sith. What does it mean to be a Dark Lord of the Sith? And we get the first series by Veitch, then it's the Veitch and Anderson stuff, taking us all the way up through the Sith Wars, where we have the dark teachings being discovered on Onderon and on Yavin 4, at least by Exar Kun, and you wind up with this sort of creation of a rule of two, where you have the Dark Lord and then his apprentice, and it's taken as if that's meant to be Master and Apprentice both being considered Dark Lords of the Sith, instead of Dark Lord of the Sith being a name for just essentially one individual and it just happens to have an apprentice. And that dynamic was great, and it set up more ideas that came later. I mean, we even see stuff going back to the Ulit Keldroma stories in the Clone Wars video game that was released back in the original Clone Wars video game push. Not the ones tied into the cartoon series, but that first run of the things where it's all vehicle combat pretty much. I mean, that was a great era, fun stories, and it created its own spinoff. Well, there's a spirit there of a long-dead Sith. Well, where did this come from? Aha! There was at one point a Sith Empire, and how the Sith concept started going from being just another word for sort of a generic darksider to being one specific philosophy to then being not even that philosophy, but actually a species. of people who had their own empire. And of course, now we even get to see something even cooler with the character of Seknos and the other characters with him and his grandparents, in Dawn of the Jedi. We get to see Sith, who were picked up from, I guess it was Korriban, were picked up from Korriban and brought to Tython aboard one of those Tho'yor ships, and they've never been tainted by the
Jedi.
The Dark Jedi who escape from the 100-year darkness and corrupt the Sith species and create the Sith Empire and become the Dark Lords of the Sith, so to speak. They've never had contact at this point yet because they don't exist. That Jedi Order itself doesn't exist. And we've got a Sith character, and we're trained to look at that type of character and say, "Eesh, Sith, bad."
Yeah. And in that regard, mentioning how the Sith were at one point actually selected to be Jedi, and then we see the Dark Jedi go and taint them. I'm actually surprised we don't have more dark side orders out there in that same regard. I mean, it would not take Night Sisters, perfect example. There's another one. They might as well be Sith in the same intents and purposes. We had a dark sider that was banished. She went to that planet and oh snap, I created a whole group of dark sisters. I mean, we could easily have more of these popping up. And yet we don't. So, I mean, I think in that aspect, kind of be glad it's just the Sith, that we don't have the Sith and the Sithlingons, some new batch that, some Sith Lord went to this planet and corrupted them all. But, the potential's there. But I think getting back to the main question, I think for me, it's going to get back to most things. It's going to come to your point of view on the saga. If you're only going to aspire to George's vision, and that mainly being the movies and the TV shows, then I would say yes, the revolving nature of the circular fight between the Jedi and the Sith and the way it's historically gone post Return of the Jedi is kind of ruining the ending for Anakin. It's definitely throwing it a crimp in your style, I guess. I mean, the sacrifice is definitely destroyed if that's all you're reading. Yeah, it would totally make Anakin's sacrifice pointless. But I think, like me and Nathan have said throughout this episode, I think that you could say that the way it's been done in the EU, it makes sense that it's continuing the way it has continued. Yeah, they may have had an opportunity here or there to make it a little bit better, but I think they've done a pretty good job overall, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, a lot of them turned out very well. I really like the concept of the one Sith and how it's so different from the other ones. I really like the legacy story. I liked seeing Jason fall to the dark side following his path. I know a lot of people didn't like the whole Geno, Jason in name only thing you've mentioned before, but I really, really dug Legacy of the Force. It's probably my favorite Star Wars novel series from those large series, even certainly more so than Fate of the Jedi or even New Jedi Order, but they've done very well with it.
One comment that Lord Krayt said about Jason, and I believe he said it in the Legacy series, the comics, referring to Legacy of the Force, the books, because in that book we had the Lost Tribe get really close to running into the one Sith while Jason's doing his own rule of two kind of thing. And in the comic, when Krayt looks back, he talks about how Darth Cadus was kind of a lightning rod for the Sith, and that he drew the Jedi's attention away from what they were doing. And I loved how that worked out, because you in that one series, you had so many things going on and you had all these different versions of Sith so close to running into each other. It was like, oh, how is this going to play out? Oh,
I think that's what gets people, though, where people start complaining about the cyclical nature of the whole Jedi versus Sith conflict. Because we've got ones out there that we don't know a whole lot about, that we haven't seen much. The Force War, we've got the first Great Schism, the 100-Year Darkness, we see these bits and pieces. We got the thing where Darth Ruin winds up leaving and founds what winds up being the Sith Order, the new Sith Order, that eventually does lead to Palpatine and so forth. But a lot of these are thousands of years apart. But then you've got two instances where it does kind of seem like it's coming pretty rapid fire. I mean, you've got Jason being a new Dark Lord of the Sith, while at the same time the Lost Tribe of the Sith is in the background, as is the One Sith, and especially as we get into the aftermath of what happened with Jason, bring the Lost Tribe into the forefront in Fate of the Jedi, we also have the ties into the One Sith jumping in, and you wind up essentially with almost like, really, there's this many different groups out there with this philosophy. Now, I mean, you could make the argument, you know, you look at right before World War II, you've got essentially a version of fascism rising in Japan. You have fascism rising through Italian fascism under Mussolini in Italy. You've got Nazi fascism, National German or National Socialist German Workers' Party version of fascism popping up under Hitler, and you've got fascism under Francisco Franco over in Spain. I mean, you know, how many different ways can an idea evolve, and is it realistic to see them all around the same time? History would say that apparently it can, it's just relatively rare. So you've got that, but fortunately it's the only era where it's all kind of overlapping. But then you've got the other place that people usually say is a point of contention, which is looking back into the several thousand years ago point. Because, yeah, there's a thousand years, well, give or take, between the early Tales of the Jedi stuff, early as in chronological, not when it was printed, it's the later stuff printed, with the Golden Age of the Sith and the Great Hyperspace War. Then a thousand years later, you got the stuff with Ulic and Exar Kun and so forth in the earlier released Tales of the Jedi stuff.
Yeah.
Then you jump, though, a very short time, only about 50 years, give or take. And then you've already got the Knights of the Old Republic games and all the stuff happening around that with the Knights of the Old Republic comic series plus Knights of the Old Republic War, its own sequel, The Sith Lords. Then you jump only a matter of, I guess it's, you know, around 300 to 400 years, give or take, and all of a sudden, boom, you've got the Old Republic. And now there's been this Sith Empire rebuilding in the background tied into the older comics, and they're going to come back, but they also now have the ties into Revan, thanks to the Revan novel and so forth, and the Old Republic video game. I think that's where it starts to drive people nuts, in that it feels like as soon as one thread is ended, another one begins. And it's funny, because that era, it's hundreds of years apart, or it's decades apart. In the post-Return of the Jedi EU, until we make the jump up to Legacy, most of these stories aren't very far apart. You know, the stretches in those earlier stories are a lot further apart, it seems like, than the ones in the post-Jedi stuff. But sure. Maybe it's just the fact that they're being published so quickly after each other, and they are such huge galaxy-spanning conflicts that are showing up. From the standpoint of this whole cyclical nature thing, are those the two that really stand out to you as the tough ones, and are they handled well? Or is there something else that's an even bigger example of this happening from a standpoint of this whole cyclical nature?
No, I think those are the big ones. You know, and going in the past direction, yeah, you're dead on. There were so many. I mean, we had to talk about the Great Schism happening twice now because of the whole dating conflicts, and they didn't want to throw out any of the stories. You know, I think about Knight Errant and how the Sith in that are presented in a way that is completely unique to anything we've seen before. And I like the fact that we can do that with Sith who keep coming around like a bad mold. You know, it's like you just can't get rid of them no matter how much you scrub. There's always one little particle of mold and it expands and it expands and it expands. And oh my gosh, we got a whole corner of the wall that's already covered in mold that we just cleaned yesterday. And I think that in that regard, there's hope out there. I mean, yeah, I think, like, I get back to it's that point of view, if you can get beyond it or not. I mean, if you're going to get hung up on it, you're going to get hung up on it, and you're not going to ever get past it. But I think if you can get around it, I think that, yeah, I think that there's potential there to find a way, make your own personal retcon, if you will. But I think, yeah, that those are the main issues with most people that have issue with this, is the ones in the past and the ones in the future, and Anakin's sacrifice and whether or not it had meaning.
And couldn't you make the argument that, yeah, this is a cyclical thing, but it's cyclical in a way that at least makes sense in terms of one conflict giving birth to another? I mean, I've heard people say it doesn't make sense that going from the Tales of the Jedi Sith Wars into the Knights of the Old Republic stuff, that one could have naturally led to the other that quickly. You know, what were they fighting for in the first one? I mean, you think about real history. You know, we finish the Napoleonic Wars. We have the Congress of Vienna. We screw up, and all these countries start making these, you know, under-the-table deals and alliances because they don't like the idea of a true balance of power, which is something the Congress of Vienna really pushed, and boom, a little conflict, or what should have been a little conflict between Austria-Hungary and Serbia, blows up into World War I because of those alliances. We end World War I, we decide instead of breaking up Germany, we keep it whole, but we punish the crap out of them with the Treaty of Versailles. In rises Hitler on the coattails of that you know, what Germany thinks of as an unfair bit of treatment, and boom, you get World War II. And what's left of World War II, the way that things get wrapped up thanks to the Tehran Conference, the Yalta Conference, the Potsdam Conference, you wind up with essentially the setup of a divided world heading into the Cold War, and so on and so on. In
Absolutely
real history,
right.
Yeah, conflict leads to conflict. There are little interim moments, but, you know, again, humans are human beings. You know, we're going to kind of make some of the same mistakes. One leads to the other. But in Star Wars, at least with the things with the Jedi versus Sith, it seems like that makes sense. I'm more concerned, if you're going to talk about things that are cyclical, there are other things that seem to repeat a lot that should be much more of a concern. You know, how many times can the Solo kids get kidnapped before they put little LoJack things on those kids and, you know, keep them from being kidnapped? There's a lot of other smaller things. You know, how many times can Han and Chewie wind up going on a smuggling mission with one of their old buddies and the old buddy turns out to double-cross them? You know, oh, big shocker this time.
Yeah, okay. Han ran with a bad group. That's all we can say.
Yeah, and apparently he never learns his lessons, you know. There are so many different times where we see things repeat. And, you know, we dealt with this with the cramming episode last time around with things like how many different times they're looking for the Death Star plans and such. There are plenty of times where there are cyclical nature to stories. And sometimes we're talking loops of only a matter of days, weeks, or months where similar events are being told and somehow being required to fit together. I don't think that this one should be that big a concern, except for maybe the undermining of Return of the Jedi part. But at least from a cyclical thing, I think the cycles make sense.
You know, it makes me think, you know, your point just now makes me think of the Millennium Falcon. You know, it's always been a hunk of junk, but it's got more tricks than you know kind of thing. And I want to say, let me look at the covers here. Was it Jedi Search? One of the books around that time, I want to say it was Jedi Search. Han crashes the Millennium Falcon, and then in the next series, Leia, as Chief of State, gets the Falcon rebuilt from frame up. And yet, like, we have another book, and yet they're right back to, well, the Falcon's just a hunk of junk again. And, you know, they find ways to make it work, but there are definitely, you know, circles going on even in the EU.
You know, that's why we wound up with two different books that are the background of the Falcon in the last few years, right? We got that Haynes Guide, and we got the 3D... owner's manual thing where it's the cutaway and everything. And of course we had the novel that had that ending that, you know, somebody should have told me going into it that the ending was supposed to be based on Maltese Falcon, because I just saw it as an unsatisfying ending. I'd like to maybe go back and read that someday and get more out of it now that I know it's not supposed to be. It's kind of like what we kept saying about the end of Scoundrels. Doesn't he have to someday lose the money that he might get within Scoundrels? Otherwise it doesn't make sense. It would have been nice Millennium Falcon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because the ending of it is very much sort of that, wait, what kind of thing that it would have been nice to know where it came from. But, I mean, there's so many different stories that are told, so many that are told well. There are some that aren't told so well, but there have been some very well-done stories. And in using the saga as a setting and using Star Wars as a setting to tell miniature sagas within the whole, as we dealt with a few episodes ago, I think they do a pretty good job here. Though, you know, there is that argument that could be made that you are undermining Return of the Jedi if he's really supposed to bring balance to the Force and end what's happening with the Sith, that should have been the end of it. But at the same time, if you want to go by that logic, shouldn't it also have been the end of fighting the Empire? Shouldn't it also have been
true.
The end of anything going forward? Because that's
so
it.
True.
If yes, balance is about
the fighting the Empire. How many stories was that? I mean, we're still dealing with the repercussions of that. The Emperor's still there. They're fighting Jag because there's some Darth Moffs. I'm sorry, Grand Moffs that they just don't like it. And they want the Empire to be as resurgent as it can. They don't like the one corner of the galaxy they're in. They want it all. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's other topics that do the same thing that I think we let slide right now. That we've seen that, well, Bantam did it up the wazoo, so, well, we're just going to accept it for what it is, and we're going to roll with it.
So I guess it really comes down to, just kind of as the final point, I would almost say that whether or not, you know, to answer the question, does it undermine Return of the Jedi, you know, it's one of those certain point of view things. It depends on which of the two things you look at. Going back to something we've talked about on this show before, is it Lucas's saga you're looking at, or is it the broader saga that the EU presents? In the former, yeah, it probably does undermine it. In the latter, no. It's just a cycle, and that's the way broader stories work. That's my final thought. Mark, what's yours?
I'm right there with you. Your point of view is going to be everything on this. If you're only looking at the movies, it knowing that that happened could, yes, impinge upon Anakin's sacrifice. But luckily for you, you do not actually take anything that happens after Return of the Jedi seriously. So you have nothing to worry about. Now, the EU side of things, I think it worked. I think some things could have been done a little bit better, but for the most part, it worked well. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying the ride. I'm currently at Apocalypse, and I'm loving what's going on with the Sith. I'm glad that they're back in, and it's created a great few chapters that I've read so far, and I'm looking to a great outcome on the end of this story.
All right, and with that, folks, be sure to share your thoughts with us. You can catch us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms. The same thing on Twitter, at SWBeyondFilms. You can email us, this is different, beyondthefilms@StarWarsFanWars.com. And of course, we always post the episodes over on StarWarsReport.com, and you can just leave a comment on the page there for the individual episode. Lots of ways to get in touch with us, and of course, we'll be coming at you next week with yet another episode here for Star Wars Beyond the Films. For Star Wars Beyond the Films, this has been Nathan Butler.
Mark Herleman. Yes, yes, and Whistler.
May the Force be with you.
Mark, where's your never quotas?
Oh, yeah. Don't quote us the odds.